And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic podcast produced and hosted by African-Americans that are not affiliated with a major network. I am the godfather, Nate Milton, joined as always by Big Nasty Alfred Cunawa and the one and only Marcus Vandenberg. We are live, fellas. What is up?
Looking good, fellas. Looking good.
What's up, guys?
And we are feeling good. Thanks to everybody out there checking us out. I know there's some technical difficulties, but we're going to get through it. We're going to get to it. And let me get the first cheap pop of the night. I want to thank you for listening, and you for listening, and you, and especially you, whoever that is. But that's how it's done, right, Big Nasty?
That's exactly how it's done. I like the pointing, Oprah.
Thank you. I'm just trying to work the gimmick. We do have a lot of fun things to talk about, of course. Recap WrestleMania, Raw from this past week. Big news about that man called Sting and Double J, Jeff Jarrett, getting back in the game. But before we do that, we would be remiss if we did not kind of start things off on a down note. If you're a wrestling fan, if you're a fan of our show, then you probably have heard the news by now. If not, let us be the first to tell you the unfortunate news that the Ultimate Warrior, recent inductee to the WWE Hall of Fame, a.k.a. Jim Hellwig, has passed away. And, for those that hadn't heard, Brother Marcus, kind of fill them in on what went down this past week.
Yeah, so Tuesday night, Warrior flew back from New Orleans to Phoenix, and he was with his wife as they were checking into a Phoenix hotel, actually in Scottsdale, Arizona. And he literally dropped dead right there in the parking lot of the hotel. This happened at 5:50 Pacific time. And it happened, less than 24 hours after Warrior's appearance on Monday Night Raw, which made the whole thing a little more surreal because, I was literally on the plane getting back from New Orleans when I landed and got a text that said, Warrior had died, and I thought it was a joke at first, and I jumped online and saw the news. So the timing of it was just, awful timing. And especially after listening to his speech on Raw and hearing some of the words he had to say, and you look back at it now, it's just kind of eerie that he said what he had to say and he died.
Yeah, it's very, very eerie, and the thing is, when you saw that speech on Raw, he was really getting into character, and even when he shook the ropes, he seemed like that took something out of him. So you have to ask yourself whether or not the rigors of being a Hall of Fame headliner and a WrestleMania 30 and all the press he had to do, if that sudden whirlwind that he wasn't used to beforehand took its toll on him and accelerated that process. Unfortunately, he did have a wrestler's heart, and it was just bad news either way, but especially because you got to see his family, you got to see his mom, you got to see how proud his wife was of him, and he walked out there with his daughters, and you knew how close he was with his family. So the fact that they just died, if anybody was to be a victim of a death hoax that I just brushed off, like I was at Dodger Stadium when this happened, and a couple of guys behind me were talking, oh my God, the Warrior died? And I remember just shaking my head like all these baseball fans, these casual wrestling fans are so easy to work. And thinking that they were just talking about a hoax. And then when I got home, I found out that it was for real. So I just really didn't know what to think.
Yeah, I was in the same boat because, as longtime wrestling fans, we all know the rumor back in the day that the Warrior had passed and they'd got some new guy to replace him. Obviously that wasn't the case. And so I did take it with a grain of salt when I first heard the news. But then when you start to see more and more credible sources, corroborate the story, it's like, wow. And on the one hand, it's the worst possible timing, as Marcus alluded to. But on the other hand, it's also, you never want to see somebody go out before their time, but it's also, he went out maybe with a sense of peace that he wouldn't have had he gone out earlier. And, the whole Hall of Fame weekend and the reconciliation with the wrestling part of his life and being able to, bring his family to that and kind of get a sense of closure and to come out on Raw one last time in front of the fans. I think, as tragic as it is, that it seems almost fitting in a way.
It seems very Warrior-esque, if that makes any sense, that this happened the way it did. And he had a chance to say goodbye. Most guys don't have a chance to say goodbye. Who knows when he would have been on Raw next after this past Monday. So it's just all very weird. And just sitting there at the Smoothie King Center and listening to what he had to say, and then, you know, realizing the man has, you know, died just a day later. It's just, and even the photo of the guy in the airport who took the selfie with Warrior that morning. I mean, he looked fine in the picture, and then he was fine on the flight home, and that was that.
Yeah, I mean, no pun intended. It was the ultimate closure, no pun intended. And he got to do everything and reconcile with everybody who, almost everybody who he possibly had a major problem with, from the McMahons, Linda McMahon, who he used to call Mom, Vince McMahon, he sat in an office with when they were trying to get the deal together, and they eventually did. He got to go out there and cut his promo. He did everything when it came to his wrestling standpoint to reconcile that. And this was a perfect time for him to just go away and be a recluse, and people would be okay with that because they got to see the Warrior one more time. So it is very unfortunate that he passed away, but at least he passed away with a conclusion of some sort.
Yeah, now the crazy thing now is you kind of are going to get people that have not thought about Jim Hellwig in a while and have not focused on the Ultimate Warrior. You're going to get these stories from both sides. You know, one side that will try to, you know, demonize the guy, and the other side that's going to try to deify the guy. And the truth is, you know, he's a complex dude. He's not either or. He's all and I think that, you know, he had some political views that, you know, you or I may not agree with, and maybe a little bit out there, a little bit too extreme. He, you know, could have, you know, we've heard Court Bauer, our good friend, talk about dealing with the Warrior in a business sense and how he wasn't always the best person to do business with. But you also hear stories about, you know, how kind he was to people, and stories about, you know, how loyal he was to people. And so I think it's going to take some time to kind of parcel everything out. You know, we all remember that hatchet job, the self-destruction, the Ultimate Warrior DVD. And, you know, that was one take at that time of who Jim Hellwig was. And now we're hearing more and more that those stories were, you know, fabricated or at least greatly exaggerated. And now I think it's going to take a while to, you know, just kind of get a crystallized version of who this guy was, because like all of us, like most of us, you know, he had a lot of different sides.
And I shared the Deadspin story in the chat the other day, but I would suggest going to read it, especially if you haven't been in the loop with Warrior or don't know much about his post-wrestling career, because a lot of that stuff, yeah, it might be insensitive, might be bad timing now that he's dead, but some of that stuff in there you just can't ignore, and I think you just need to have a balanced look at this guy before we go out and rush and say he was some, you know, great hero. But at the same end, did you guys see the Nancy Grace interview from yesterday?
No, I did not.
So Nancy Grace had Diamond Dallas Page on, and basically her whole point of having TDP on was trying to imply that Warrior died because he was on steroids at one point in his life. And to the point where she had this graphic of wrestlers who had died young, and she tried to imply that Owen Hart died young because he was on steroids. So it was, of course, a Nancy Grace hatchet job of reporting when it comes to wrestling, but I would check that out as well, just to see what's going on. And I know it's going to come down soon, whenever they do the autopsy and they determine the cause of death, that we have to go back and discuss the whole steroids thing. But you got to remember, Warrior was on steroids at a time when steroids was okay. I mean, this guy hasn't been in the ring in, 20 years almost. So I really hope we don't go back down the whole Crispin Wall angle in terms of why wrestlers are dying young.
Yeah, and the thing about Warrior is that the reason his gimmick worked so well and he got over so huge is because he believed that gimmick and he lived that gimmick. And he's such an irony to me, because this man, Jim Hellwig, Warrior, whatever you want to call him, was able to separate himself from wrestling and become kind of a recluse. But at the same time, you know, even though you hear his Hall of Fame speech where he's saying the dinosaurs need to move on and we need to give the next generation their chance, and he was able to move on and live life after wrestling, a really peaceful life after wrestling. Even though all that stuff is true, he still called himself Warrior. He legally changed his name to Warrior, and he still, if you saw him speak in public, as Marcus and Nate alluded to, said some batshit crazy stuff. He was still that guy, despite the fact that maybe from an outside perspective, he moved himself away from wrestling. He was still Jim Hellwig and the Warrior combined, so you know that he lived that gimmick. And in terms of, you know, these people who are coming out now, it's a lot of casual observers who are saying, oh, another wrestler dying in his 50s. 5-6 years ago, I was the biggest proponent of, you know, the fact that wrestling is so dangerous and they need to do something to reform. WWE has taken strides in correcting the wrestling business. It'll never be a safe sport or sport entertainment, But the fact is WWE has partnered with the Sports Legacy Institute and Chris Nowinski and given them $1 million to further concussion and brain research. They have the rehab program to where anybody who's worked for WWE gets to go to rehab, no questions asked, on their dime. And they have moved towards a safer, better WWE, especially with the PG era. And when you see deaths like this now, it's an outlier. And there are going to be some balances due. As much as I hate to say it, there are guys right now in their 50s who are in danger in that same boat of dying. But I would like to imagine that 5, 10, 15 years from now, it's going to be very rare to see wrestlers dying this young.
Yeah, and kind of to sum things up before we move on to the other events of the weekend, you know, this is a complex guy. This, you know, Jim Helwig, the person, is somebody that, you know, all you can do is lay the facts out. Lay out, you know, the good, the bad, everything in between, and then it's up to you as a fan to make up your own mind, make up your own decision. But I think the ultimate warrior, the character that this man portrayed, you can't take anything away from the guy. He wasn't the most technical guy in the ring, but that character that Alfred alluded to, that intensity that he brought to the ring, for a long time, I think you could make the argument that, you know, if you go out on the street and ask somebody in the mainstream who is a professional wrestler, they'll tell you Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair, Macho Man Randy Savage, and the Ultimate Warrior, and those are the four guys, you know, and maybe you'll get, you know, Bret Hart in Canada, or, you know, a Dusty Rhodes somewhere down south, but for the most part, I think those are the four guys that you would think of, and that is a testament to that character, because, you know, as we all said, he wasn't the best worker, but you believe that he was that guy, and I think it came across through the television screen.
He pinned Hulk Hogan in the main event of WrestleMania. Nobody else can ever say they did that.
Yeah, so rest in peace to Jim Helwig, the Ultimate Warrior. I think it's time to also, you know, we've had a lot of fun with the Ultimate Warrior bit the last couple of months, getting on Marcus's nerves whenever there was a mystery guy coming in. That was our kind of go-to gag, so we're going to retire that. But I'll give it to you one last time for all you out there in YouTube land. Hear me, Warriors! Speak to me! And yes, Brother Helwig, we did hear you, and for months and years to come, the fans, your coworkers, and wrestling journalists will speak of your work because you definitely had an impact. So we'll go from there to the Mania, and I think maybe the best place to start, since we did have a man on the ground, as they say, is to kick it over to Marcus Vanderberg. Before we get to the card in general, what were your thoughts down there in New Orleans, just the atmosphere? Did you get a chance to check out Access and some of the other things? And what was just the general vibe of community down there in WrestleMania 30?
Yeah, it was not as crowded as I thought it would be. I've been in New Orleans for All-Star Weekend, where that's more of a shit show in terms of people and just people out and about. This WrestleMania, while there was, you know, tons of wrestling fans there, obviously, it never felt like you were overrun by just wrestling fans. There was, you know, if you were to take WrestleMania away this weekend from New Orleans, it would have been a slow weekend in the city. So overall, it was a good weekend. I loved having stuff within walking distance. That's going to be a big issue next year in Santa Clara because you don't need to drive everywhere. The fact that I could walk from the hotel to the Superdome to Bourbon Street to Canal Street, I mean, it's a great town to hold an event like that. So that was a plus. What else? Yeah, wrestling fans are wrestling fans. I got so many awkward – I had a bunch of T-shirts I bought from Barbershop Window that I wore during the week. And I got so many awkward I want to talk to you about your shirt, but I'm a wrestling fan, so I don't know how to talk looks. That it was kind of it was kind of weird. But, yeah, overall, it was a good weekend. The fiancé and I had fun in New Orleans. You can't really have a bad time in New Orleans. Got to meet John Away, if we can discuss that a little later. But, yeah, overall, a good weekend.
So did you, besides the WWE stuff, did you check out any of the other events, the IndyCon or ROH, any of that stuff?
No, I like wrestling, but I gotta draw the line at some. I'm not gonna pay money to take photos with Kurt Angle and Virgil, as people did at at the John Away meetup. Some guy said he paid $40 for a picture of Virgil. I'm just like, really?
Virgil gotta eat too, man.
Yeah, there you go. I'm happy for Virgil on that one.
Yeah, but no.
This is like,
no.
Virgil's Christmas. This is like the one time a year he knows he's gonna get some money.
Virgil. But no WrestleCon, no access. I went by the store to buy gifts, but I didn't go actually pay for the access. It's like $50, and if I really wanted to do access, I can do it out here during SummerSlam. So I passed on that. So it was really just Mania and the Raw. That was it.
Cool, and we will get into your thoughts as we go through kind of those two events. But as we always do on these kind of shows, we're going to kick it over to Bleacher Report's own Big Nasty Alfred Cunningham. And Alfred, if you don't mind, do the honors and take us through the event 29 years in the making, WrestleMania 30.
Okay, well, why not? We can start at the top. We get this video package of New Orleans and this jazzy scene, and then quite possibly what may be the greatest WrestleMania moment of all time kicks off immediately at the show. So think about it this way. You're paying essentially, I know it's $60, but you're paying $10 for WrestleMania for the month of April. And this is how WrestleMania opens, with Hulk Hogan coming out to the ring and referring to WrestleMania in New Orleans as being in the Superdome, or the Silverdome, two times. And now the second time, he said it's so great to be in the Silverdome, brother. And the crowd revolts and immediately starts chanting Superdome. He catches himself. You see this kind of moment where it starts to sink in, moment of clarity with Hogan, and he turns and he says, "Oh, I'm sorry, brother. I meant the Superdome." And the crowd pops. So that in and of itself is just such a great WrestleMania moment. And he says the general welcome to WrestleMania. People are going to prove themselves. This is on the line. This, that, the other. And he says, "But you never know when there's going to be a WrestleMania moment." And out comes Stone Cold Steve Austin. We get the glass break. He makes a long walk down that WrestleMania ramp to Hulk Hogan. And, of course, Austin kicks off by saying, "It's great to be back here in the Silverdome," kind of ribbing Hulk Hogan, which would be a theme in this segment. And he basically goes out. He says you didn't know what he would do if he came face-to-face with Hulk Hogan. He was sitting next to him at the Hall of Fame, and he saw him at WrestleMania 1, WrestleMania 2, and he's getting the what. And so at this point, he says he didn't know what he would do if he ever saw Hulk Hogan face to face. He teases that he was going to open a can of whoop-ass on Hogan. And then he says, goes on to say that he respects Hulk Hogan and everything that he's done in the business. So a really cool moment between really the two top stars in WWE history, if you want to argue. And they shake hands in the middle of that ring. And Hulk Hogan gets the crowd to say, "Hell yeah," one more time. And Austin makes a call out to the locker room. Another general, you know, got to come out here and prove yourself. He says, "Austin 316 says, I just whoop your ass." And with that, we get The Rock's music. Now, WWE is so good with camera angles, I think, all night, is that they show the crowd reacting to Austin. And when they play The Rock's music, you can see all the fans in the front row just going crazy for The Rock, who comes out, kind of milks his entrance a little bit, as he likes to do, and he gets in the ring. He once again does his finally bit. He's sure to throw in that finally we're back in the Superdome. So, again, Hogan's getting killed here, which is funny. And Hogan's playing along with it. He understands what's going on. Rock cuts an amazing promo, just like a political speech, where he's calling Hogan and Austin the two best of all time. He really did something that I thought was brilliant. This is a theme that we've seen all throughout WrestleMania weekend, of taking the present and bridging forward to the future. He said, even taking the past and bridging forward to the future, to where he said that, you know, Hulk Hogan is here. We're going to see a guy who's going to fight in the name of hustle, loyalty, respect. Of course, the crowd starts booing. He says, but that's not going to happen, and that would have never happened if Hulk Hogan didn't say to eat your vitamins and say your prayers, brother. Then he says, we're going to see a guy fight in the name and fight against the authority, and the crowd pops for Daniel Bryan and says yes. And he says, that's never going to happen if Austin didn't fight his boss and kick his candy ass. So really just taking their generation and bridging it forward to what we're seeing today. He says, if you smell it, The Rock is cooking. Austin says his catchphrase, Hogan is sure to say, what you going to do when WrestleMania 30, Austin Rock, and the Superdome go wild on you, and they have some beers. It's just a fantastic segment. And it's something that, I mean, WrestleMania could have gone on and had The Undertaker lost and Daniel Bryan lose to Triple H. And I still would have put this as one of the top WrestleManias just because of that moment. What did you guys think about it, starting with Nate?
Yeah, this was what I wanted to see most out of this program, you know, this broadcast, this pay-per-view. I wanted to see the classic moments. You know, we get one a little bit later on with Orndorff, Piper, Mr. T, and Hulk Hogan that I love. You know, I wanted to see more of that. I think, you know, we only got, what, two or three instances of that. But to me, this is what it was about, both celebrating the past and the history, but also, you know, tying it to the present. And I think that's something that a lot of these guys, especially in your mid-card, they could take a lesson from some of these guys, some of these older guys, not necessarily in terms of in-ring, but in terms of the character. And, you know, just Austin, Hogan, Rock, three of the best. You could argue the case for any of those guys as the greatest superstar in the history of the WWF / WWE. And it was a great way to kind of set the mood and kick things off there. So how did you feel in the Silverdome, Marcus? How did that come across?
It was a great moment. And I knew right then and there that this was already going to be a better WrestleMania than 29. Because there was nothing on the 29 show that could compare to that first 15-minute segment. So right off the bat, it was a good start. What you couldn't tell was the Hogan fans were singing along to his theme song when it came out. It didn't come across on TV, but at least in my section, they were singing it word for word.
That's amazing.
So it was just a great moment and a great way to start the show.
Yeah, and you get that with arena shows or stadium shows where the crowd is bigger, the sound tends to go up and out, usually it's through the air. But with the Superdome, I thought they did a good job of having the sound project. But then there were moments where, like, during the Bray Cena match, I saw them doing the Bray sway, but I couldn't really hear them singing He's Got the Whole World in His Hands. So that's the stadium effect. But still, it was very loud at points where it was supposed to be. That's why I'm always a proponent for dome shows, as excited as I'm going to be for San Francisco. In fact, that it's going to be in my backyard next year. It's just when you're in a dome stadium, you get the noise, and that just makes it come off as a bigger event.
Yeah.
From here, Marcus and Nate talked about getting off to the right start as far as WrestleMania goes. They went off to the right start as far as spectacle and an in-ring match goes when Stephanie McMahon is introduced, and she is wearing the most trolling outfit I think I've ever seen her wear. This little tie. Just, it's an amazing outfit. Got these little short shorts, and it's like the corporate circa 1930 or something like that. You just got to go back and see it. I love it. And she introduces Triple H. And from here on, we get what, in my estimation, was the best entrance of the entire show, and just the spectacle.
Yeah.
Amazing. And there are a lot of great entrances on this show, so that's saying a lot. Triple H is sitting in this throne, and it's basically his last, what, 5-6 entrances combined, because you've got the big throne like WrestleMania 22, you've got the barbarian outfit like WrestleMania 22, and then you've got that big Triple H machine that we've seen the last couple of years. You've got the smoke, and he's got the mask on that he had in WrestleMania 27. So it's just all these components, this regal music playing. You've got some NXT divas who are in costume, and they remove his robe, they remove his mask on cue, and I mean, it's such a good entrance. I think this is a pro Daniel Bryan crowd. This is a crowd that really could have rioted if Daniel Bryan would have lost, and just based on this entrance alone, they're cheering Triple H.
They pop so hard for that
they
entrance.
They pop huge. And I thought it was amazing. It's one of those things that it's so important to do this early, because then you really feel like you're watching WrestleMania. I felt like the last couple of WrestleManias, it's namely WrestleMania 27, was guilty of this, is that the first hour or so, you didn't feel like it was WrestleMania until the Undertaker match, really. And the Undertaker match is usually late in the card. So this made me immediately feel like I'm at WrestleMania if the Ross and Rock and Hogan segment didn't do it. And then Daniel Bryan comes out later to the standard entrance. He's wearing kind of Bruiser Brody's type kick pads, but I like to think that he's doing it more to look like a goat. And they get off to really, I believe it was about a 20-plus minute match. It was an amazing match. With the story of the match is basically Triple H working over Daniel Bryan's heavily taped shoulder, and every time Daniel Bryan would get some offense going, Triple H would cut him off. Stephanie was ringside, and she was just so great, cheering your Triple H on while antagonizing Daniel Bryan. A couple of suicide dives to the outside. They had this crazy spot that I'm sure Daniel Bryan called, where Triple H hits a double underhook back suplex, which is something you only really see in Japan, and they pulled out all the stops here. Triple H had pedigree and got a near fall. Daniel Bryan eventually would counter and get out of a back suplex and go on to hit his flying knee for the win. And 1-2-3 clean in the middle of the ring. Triple H would be on the outside, and Stephanie came up to Daniel Bryan, slapped him around a couple times, and then Triple H attacked him from behind, as some have expected, and hit him in the shoulder with a steel chair with his arm against the post. So now we're in this mode to where we don't know if Daniel Bryan will be 100% for his main event match at WrestleMania. But really, I think this is a WrestleMania looking back. I don't think we're going to remember this for any particular standout, incredible match that's like, oh, this is an all-time great match. But this one was close.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the match. I think just kind of going back to the entrances, when Stephanie came out, my first thought was like she was doing an homage to Sensational Sherry.
Yes.
That was like one of her get-ups. And then when Triple H came out, it was funny. I was at my buddy's house, Leon, I know you're watching out there. Shout out to you and your family. But, it was like Skeletor. You know what I'm saying? Like Triple H coming out there looking like Skeletor from Masters of the Universe. I'm going to bury you, He-Man. So, but the match itself was great. You know, I think I will agree. It was probably in ring the match of the night for me. Told a good story. Triple H, even in defeat, looked strong. And, you know, they did the right thing. I liked the placement of the match on the card. I think it was a good way to start things off. And really, you know, kind of continued the role of this night where you're like, this, like Marcus was saying, like that's the opening moments of last year's WrestleMania compared to the opening, you know, moments 30 minutes or so of this year's WrestleMania. You're like, something's going on. This is a good night.
I couldn't even name you the opening match last year from WrestleMania 29. Can you offer?
I was there, and I'm trying to think.
Fantastic. Was it
Miz versus Wade Barrett? Was a pre-show, and then the opener was it? I don't know if it was Ziggler against Steve Malenko, but that's a great point. I don't know, and I don't really care.
I mean, I really don't know. Like, I honestly not joking around. I can't name you the opening match, and I'm pretty sure next year this time I could probably name you the opening match. I'd probably name you the pre-show match because actually that was pretty good as well. We skipped over that, but
We'll get to that.
The tag match was actually one of the better matches of the night. But, yeah, I mean, this is a great way to start the show. And if, you know, if there are any people still on the fence about ordering who are trying to follow along on the Internet, and then they saw, okay, well, Brian matches first. And I'm sure that only helped the WWE in terms of getting more views on their network. So the match at times was a little quiet inside the dome, but it started off kind of slow. Until the end. So I understand why the crowd might have been down a little bit, especially after the Hogan segment.
Oh, and for your information, FYI, the match that kicked off last year's Mania was the Shield versus Randy Orton, Sheamus, and Big
right.
Show.
Yeah, okay.
Good to know.
Just looking back, like, I'm just looking at the matches on last year's card, and it's like, wow, it is night and day, the level of quality between last year and this year.
That's true. Well, I'm glad you mentioned the Shield, Nate, because they were next as a Shield against the New Age Outlaws and Kane. Mm-hmm. It was a weird kind of order of entrances because the New Age Outlaws come out first, and they start healing on the crowd a little bit, but the Shield cuts them off. So we're not going to get that New Age Outlaws entrance, which I think is the right decision because they're the heels. But this is WrestleMania 30, and I'm sure a lot of people paid money, not necessarily to see the New Age Outlaws, but they expected that as part of their shtick to go out there.
And it's probably their last match as well. This is probably it for them.
Yeah, and real quick, Marcus, do you think people were angry live when they didn't get that entrance? Because they seemed a little deflated when they figured that the New Age Outlaws weren't going to do that entrance.
It's hard to tell. I don't think so. I think, you know, it would have sucked if they got all the way to the ring and was ready to do it, and then it cut to the Shield. So they at least tied it off early enough.
Yeah, that's a great point. Well, so the Shield comes out. They're wearing masks. We're getting all kinds of aces and eights joke that all sound the same on Twitter. And after that, Kane comes out. So you're getting like it's heels come out, then babyface, then another heel. And this was just under 3 minutes, 2 minutes and 56 seconds, a squash match. Pretty much all you need to know is the fact that the Shield did a double, triple powerbomb, if that makes sense, the New Age Outlaws. They actually, I think, bruised Billy Gunn's, and he received internal injuries to where he was coughing up blood. And the Shield goes over. Really quick squash match. Marcus, you think this is the right decision?
Totally the right decision. You know, this is sort of the write-off for the New Age Outlaws. They get their one last WrestleMania appearance, and it advances the Shield into this babyface stable.
Yeah, I liked it too. Especially after the Hall of Fame, Kane is like the biggest heel in the world to me right now. Disrespecting that man called T.
That was incredible. Like, of course, it tapered off, and he should have really finished shortly after that Father's Day bit. But that was incredible. I thought it was so great, and I loved the fact that he went back and I'm just trying to talk about my mama. It was like a gimmick that you could see on there.
Oh yeah, that was great. But as far as the Shield goes, you know, this wasn't the match that I wanted to see them in at WrestleMania. But that being said, at least they come out looking strong and. You know, there's a lot of possibilities for them, and I'd be interested to see which direction, you know, they seem to be going in the long term with these guys.
Well, if you saw this next match, there was a lot of possibilities based on what some people were predicting. It was a 31-man battle royal for the Andre the Giant Memorial Trophy, and, you know, it was supposed to be a 30-man. Some people got added in and switched out. Christian, of course, is out due to a concussion, and we see Cesaro in the ring now. He doesn't get an entrance, and it's worth noting at this point that in the pre-show, during a very good four-way tag team match, Cesaro took the pinfall, and him and Swagger got into it a little bit after the match to where Cesaro swung Swagger, and he split. So now he's a babyface. He's kind of buried in this 31-man battle royal. Sheamus gets an entrance out there. and they start the Battle Royal. Big Show, of course, gets an entrance because this is essentially his match. And it was a very good match for what it was, considering the fact that these are just a bunch of talented mid-carders that were buried because they, you know, into this match. Not buried, buried, but just kind of thrown into the fray because they nobody had anything for them. We saw a Kofi spot, which I think was up there with one of his better elimination-avoiding spots, to where he was basically vaulted over the steel post and he landed feet first on the bottom step, to where people reacted like he was eliminated, and then they realized that he wasn't. His feet hadn't touched the floor, so he kind of scoots up to the stairs and gets back in the ring, gets a major reaction. We saw Del Rio with
Timeout, next. We need to stop right here before we get to the finish of the match, which I actually like the finish of this match, but we need to talk about Kofi right quick.
No, okay, go ahead. You can
Kofi Kingston, if you're watching on YouTube, it's just you and the Kings right now, brother. We need to have a talk. Marcus, how long has this guy been in the WWE?
Oh, jeez.
It's almost 10 years.
That long? 2004?
I think since... No. Eight years.
We'll find out. Continue. Make your point. We'll cut you off.
Well, I'm thinking is like, let's say he's been in, you know, 8 or 9 years or whatever it is. It feels like he's been in the WWE for 12 years. 12 years of mid-carder. Enough is enough, Kofi. Every time there's a battle royal, what do they do?
2007.
7 years? Okay. Like I said, it feels like 12 years of mid-carder. Every time we got a battle royal, every time we got a money in the bank, Kofi, we need you to do the greatest spot ever in the history of spots, but you're not going to win. You're not even going to get a push. We'll have you pin Randy Orton, but the next week he gets his heat back. Kofi, there's got to be other opportunities out there. I know you're getting a check, but sometimes the check isn't worth it. It feels like to me.
And Kofi, don't go to TNA, please. Don't.
Yeah, I know what Nate's trying to say.
Don't playing TNA because there are other options now, as we'll get to.
No, he's got a wife to take care of. He's in.
So does Jack.
A check that's paid on time.
Hey, Toby Keith's money is as good as anybody's.
Let's talk about that bullshit federation later on.
Aren't there worse things to do, though?
You ain't got to take this, Kofi.
In the biggest wrestling promotion in the world, for the fact that Kofi has a niche, that he's the elimination guy, I know it's not the greatest thing in the world, but he could be JTG. I mean, there are ways. I don't think it's justified to say that Kofi needs to go away and do something else because they're using him. And anytime you see one of these matches in the Royal Rumble, which is an institutionalized pay-per-view, you look at Kofi, and when it's all said and done, when we're looking like a top 10 greatest Royal Rumble performers, as crazy as it sounds, depending on what criteria you use, you can put Kofi in there as one of the greatest performers because he always has the best spot of the card. And that's another evidence of it. It just seems like he'll never run out of ideas. And
you just saw, like at the party I was at, when he did that spot, you just saw everybody was like, oh, Kofi did it again. This is crazy. And then he was in there, and he eliminated a couple people. You could see the people starting to get excited about Kofi, and then all of a sudden, you just saw the emotion, just the deflation from the people in the room. And
now,
people go, Vince McMahon. Let my people go over. How about that?
Speaking about he gone, it eventually started to whittle down, and the final participants were really the guys who you had seen get focused on throughout this build-up process. It was the Del Rios, it was Ziggler, it was Sheamus. Kofi was in there for a while, Cesaro, and Big Show. And Ziggler gets eliminated. Del Rio, as I was saying, was really being booked strongly here. There have been rumbles that when his contract is up, he's gone from the WWE, he's on his way out, but he won on Raw, just went over out of nowhere, and you know, eliminated quite a few people. I would think that he had the most eliminations out of this card, so he looked really good in this Battle Royal. Eventually, it comes down to Cesaro and Big Show. And they're going back and forth, and the crowd is really getting behind Cesaro because it's a pro-European crowd, and even that notwithstanding, Cesaro has really been a hot act going into WrestleMania. Cesaro hits the Big Show with a couple of uppercuts, and he picks the Big Show up, holds him in the air, and literally just throws him out of the ring with really no effort. It doesn't look like it takes... It was like the same effort as he would use if he threw Kofi Kingston out of the ring. This gets a huge reaction from the crowd that I believe was singing Cesaro's Real Americans theme, which I think it would be a mistake to get rid of it at this point. And Cesaro wins the Andre the Giant Battle Royal. I know it's going to be very popular with the internet community, but given the upward trajectory that he's been on, I think this is a very good move. So, Nate, what are your thoughts? I know we got most of your thoughts on the social aspect of the Battle Royal, but from a physical standpoint, competitively, what did you think?
Yes. Kofi, you know, to the side, I thought it was a pretty good Battle Royal. You know, there's only been so much you can do. with a battle royal, and I thought they came up with some pretty good spots, some pretty interesting matchups and pairings. And at the end of the you could have gone either way, and I would have been happy. You know, Big Show or Cesaro. I do like that they gave Cesaro the win, even giving going as far as to give him that spot reminiscent of Hogan and Andre at the Silver Dome, ironically enough. And I think it's, you know, going to what we saw on Raw the next night, you know, I think that this guy has a lot of forward momentum and a lot of room to grow, and it's just a matter of, you know, are they fully going to get behind this guy? Because, you know, we've seen them get behind these kind of internet darlings before, and it's been an uneven track record at best.
No, I mean, I have faith that, especially with the Paul Heyman pairing, that they're really ready to push this guy with Lesnar out of the picture again. And, I mean, the guy can clearly wrestle. He's been through NXT. So, I mean, at this point, I don't – my only question is what they do in terms of babyface or heel, and I think the Heyman thing will signal another heel run as soon as they did done with Raw and WrestleMania this past week. So, I'm just curious to see which direction they do with his character. But that spot you mentioned with – Big Show, I think I almost saw Big Show off guard, because at one point it looked like he was driving for the rope, because I don't think he was expected to get lifted up so easily. And I was surprised he was able to lift him up so easily. So an impressive spot, probably one of the, not the second biggest moment, because that's going to be coming up, but
yeah.
probably the third biggest moment of the night was that elimination for Cesaro with Big Show.
I've never seen – well, okay, I'll put that up there. When Goldberg used to jackhammer the Big Show, that was something – that was very impressive. But that took effort on both sides. I've never seen somebody really by themselves lift up the Big Show. And not only did he lift him up, like I said, he held him there. And it's just this guy is such a freakishly strong guy. I was hoping we were going to get the swing on the Big Show. But he was doing a couple of interviews to where people were asking him, could you swing the Big Show? He was getting that question a lot. And he was saying, from a shoot standpoint, he was saying, no, it really wouldn't come off on TV very well. He was saying he could probably do it. And it sounds like an excuse, but I believe him. I think it would be slow. I don't think it would come off as well just based on the Big Show's girth. And so I agree with that, but I still want to see him do it. I think he could do it. A lot of people thought that Bray Wyatt can do it, and by it I meant beating John Cena. He was a favorite going into this next match. They get this great video package with the greatest rapper of all time, Eminem, singing A Legacy while they narrated the rivalry between these two. Cena and Bray Wyatt's problems were discussed. From here we get another phenomenal entrance to where we get this like shrine and this voodoo magic that ties into New Orleans, but it ties into Bray Wyatt's. It's so funny because Bray Wyatt is like the triple threat of the guy who you thought would get the biggest reaction, because he's grew up in Louisiana, which they were there, and I know it was an international crowd. He was over with the fans already, and you know, you get this entrance that really speaks to this culture of Louisiana and this voodoo and all this stuff, and she's got the swords, and it's really well done. Then you get Mark Crozer, friend of mine, Mark Crozer, who sings the song live. The guys who sing the Wyatt theme song, and they're singing it live after Bray Wyatt does this little candle blow out and he walks out. Fantastic entrance. From here, now this is the biggest surprise of the card at this point, is that John Cena just walks out, and for the second year in a row, he doesn't get anything. Just walks out, regular John Cena entrance. This guy's had some of the top entrances we've ever seen, but nothing. WrestleMania 30, your biggest star, walks out to the ring, blue-collar workman-like, whatever. I didn't think the crowd was into this match as much as they should have. I was very surprised because I thought they were going to really get behind Bray Wyatt and just revolt against John Cena, and they did to some degree. But, I mean, as hard as this card started, you could only expect so much from this crowd, and I think this is the first time where they kind of started to come down. And I was getting reports from Twitter that this is a match that fans went to the concessions to. I don't think by design. I think just because, like, they had gotten to a point where they were so high, and this is just naturally the spot that they would go there for. So that's unfortunate, because I thought this match was better than it should have been. The best part of the match was when John Cena went to do his "You Can't See Me" fist drop, whatever you want to call it, and Bray Wyatt just lifts right up, and this is a little crab walk routine. And, the Wyatts get involved naturally. Finish comes when John Cena counters his sister Abigail and wins clean, which was a surprise. Again, I saw this match as a match, the best underdog bet, which was John Cena, and because John Cena had been talking too much about his legacy for him to just go and lose the first time out, and John Cena goes over. John Cena beats Bray Wyatt in about 23 minutes. Good, not great match, but I think the crowd brought it down a notch. Marcus, we'll go right to you since you were in that crowd. What happened, you guys?
This is when the fiancée went to get food. She had no interest in this match. And based on how long it took you to get food, there was a lot of people in line waiting for food during this match. I didn't like the match at all. I rewatched it this morning, still didn't like it. I didn't understand the storytelling that was going on with Cena not really being the aggressor, trying to be the good guy. I mean, we've seen Cena get aggressive in the ring before. All of a sudden, he's now too good to use the metal steps and to really, you know, get it stream. I didn't get that part of the match. Overall, it just fell flat. The crowd was really out of it for whatever reason. And I thought the crowd, I mean, you mentioned the when they were doing the Bray Wyatt song. That was literally one portion of the crowd right behind the hard camera, so I'm not sure if that's why you didn't really hear it, because it was a small portion of the crowd. It wasn't the entire crowd in the Superdome. So just one of those matches, I just lost interest. I was excited going in, and then as soon as the match started, I just sort of shut out.
Yeah, it's ironic because I think, you know, we'd all agree that this was, if not the best, one of the best built matches going in to WrestleMania. And, you know, I did like the intro. It was cool. I was kind of hoping we'd hear this, though, when they came out. A little consequence in the background.
I come from a quiet family, but some of us are crazy as the Wyatt family. Well, let me not speak for the entire family.
That's another consequence. You can find that on YouTube.
Yeah, consequence.
That's enough so we don't have to pay consequence. But you can find that on YouTube. But, yeah, I thought that this match would have more going for it. And you're right, Marcus, the kind of story of, you know, John Cena fighting these inner demons of whether to cross the line when we've seen him cross the line time and time again to an extent. You know, we even got the referee that, John, don't do it. You're better than that. No, he's not. We've seen him, you know, go hardcore on people before. And so
that's a referee saying that, by the way. You're not Dr. Phil. You're not an announcer. Like, that's not your job. What,
hey,
that was
that's
so funny.
Your call.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it didn't click for me. I'm not as upset about the finish as some people are, because this is the one I thought you could have gone either way with and still continued with the storyline. But it just didn't mesh, and the crowd wasn't into it. And, you know, not only did they not get behind Wyatt, but they really didn't get on Cena that much.
Oh, that's for the next night, boy.
Yeah, they were saving up for the next night.
Hand of the year.
Marcus definitely alluded to a great point. It was the story of this match. And the story was basically John Cena battling his inner demon. It was very, very similar. Basically a ripoff of what we saw during the Kane storyline when he told him to embrace the hate. And there were points in the match where Bray Wyatt would hand John Cena a chair, or John Cena would get ready to hit him with the steel steps, and he was going to do something dastardly, but he didn't want to do it because then it would just be too dark. And he was able to overcome that. But that's usually the type of build you do in a match where John Cena would lose because he wasn't able to embrace that side of him. So that pretty much tells you right there that he's not going to go there for all these fans who are being conspiracy theorists as far as him being a heel.
You know what doesn't help Cena, looking back at WrestleMania on the broadcast? The announcers. The announcers hurt this man because they're so over the top and so cheesy, and the whole Cena Nation and just his leg. It's just like, you know, if you took away Michael Cole and just had John Cena the wrestler and he was doing his act without the announce team, I feel like the fans wouldn't hate him as much, but the announcers are part of the reason why he's so unbearable to a large part of the wrestling fans.
Yeah, no, he is, and he's just kind of a character. But again, a lot of Michael Cole is Vince McMahon. And Jim Ross was very talented, and he was somebody who had this kind of seniority with Vince McMahon. He didn't come up under Vince's tutelage in terms of being an announcer, so Vince gave him a little more leeway. But Michael Cole, as much as he's become his own man, still is used to just getting fed lines by Vince McMahon and doing buzzwords and being over the top like that. And so I think as long as Vince is alive, and even Triple H, they're not going to take away Michael Cole. He's not going anywhere. But one thing people thought wasn't going anywhere was the streak.
So hold on. What you're saying is that it made sense, I guess, for Cole to call that match between Wyatt and Cena. Because all he was doing was following the buzzwords.
Yeah, I love it. Very good. That was so worth the interruption. Okay, so now I've tried 2 times to segue into this next match. Maybe I should just try 19 more times, and I will have the same amount of wins as The Undertaker does at WrestleMania. That's right. If you do the math, that's 21. That's 21. So we get to this next match where The Undertaker is 21-0. And you figure, and everybody's been complaining about the build for this match, and it has been very bad. we get a very good video package where Paul Heyman is basically narrating and doing his best to convince people, hey, Brock Lesnar's a beast that can beat The Undertaker. Brock Lesnar gets his entrance. The Undertaker gets a really cool entrance where you see all the caskets from the guys that he's beaten at WrestleMania, and then Brock's is there as an extra and opens up and he walks to the ring. And let me tell you right now, the pace of this match did not deviate too much from The Undertaker's pace to the ring. It was a very slow match. Reports were that he got knocked out early, and there was also kind of the story of the match to where The Undertaker just didn't have it anymore and couldn't get into that next gear, which is very shrewd by WWE because they knew that The Undertaker at his age isn't going to be able to go like he once did. You know, a couple of near falls, crowd didn't buy any of the near falls. This was the first and only part of WrestleMania that I really kind of struggled to stay awake for because it was a very slow match. Brock Lesnar brawled with The Undertaker a lot. They go to the outside. One of the better spots is Undertaker goes for old school, and Brock Lesnar grabs him from the top of the ropes and hits the F5. He hits two F5s that Undertaker kicks out from. Undertaker hits a very sloppy-looking last ride for a near fall. He hits a tombstone for a near fall. Then he goes for another tombstone, and Brock Lesnar kicks out, gets out of the tombstone. And he counters. He picks the Undertaker up like beast. And he hits a third F5. And from this point on, he pins the Undertaker, and we hear the 1-2, yes, sir, the 3. And the Undertaker has lost. Now, from this standpoint, from this point on, and I've seen this probably 50 times since it's happened on the WWE Network, the reactions of the crowd, and me, this is the first time in my entire life, I shit you not, that I literally saw something and did not believe I saw it. There are people, you know, we're surrounded by people in the party that I was at when I was watching WrestleMania in my place, and I was going around, like, in hysteria, asking people, did that really just happen? I even sent Marcus a message, who's there live, asking him if that, did this just happen? The Undertaker lost at WrestleMania, and the crowd is going crazy, and you see the flash, you know, you hear them react to the graphic on screen that says 21-1 to verify that, yes, The Undertaker has lost. Michael Cole narrates that The Undertaker has lost, and it's just, there's so many steps to it that finalize that he's lost, but people don't want to believe, from the three count to Michael Cole announcing it to, you know, Justin Roberts saying the winner of this match is Brock Lesnar to Brock Lesnar's music playing, and the crowd reacts to each and every single one, of course, with the exception of Michael Cole, of these actions. And it's just, I want to get your feelings because this is something you'll never forget where you were. Starting with you, Marcus, who was there live, what was the vibe like as soon as that three count hits?
I was so confused because the entire time of the match, in my head, I figured, okay, Taker's going to win. So whenever Lesnar hit an F5, I was like, all right, he's going to kick out, whatever. The third F5 comes, he doesn't kick out. But because I was looking directly at the action in the ring, I wasn't watching the monitors, I figured that because of the awkward silence, because of the way Heyman jumped in the ring, I figured Taker got his shoulder up at the last second. And I really thought that, you know, since instant replay is so big in baseball, that leaves the WWE to try to counter with their own instant replay and prove that Taker somehow kicked out. So it wasn't until they flashed the graphic on the screen and I was like, oh, ooh, he lost. And I cheered because I wasn't really a big fan
of course
you did. At this point. I was one of the few who were cheering because there are a lot of people who were just confused and stunned and people who were crying. It was a surreal experience and didn't see it coming at all. Bravo to the WWE because if you listed all 22 previous opponents of Undertaker at WrestleMania, I'd probably have Lesnar in terms of chance of actually winning and probably in the bottom third, just the way they built that match up going into it. So it was interesting, and the only problem is it killed the crowd for the rest of the night, and they did come back for the main event, but I think it still put a damper on to the reaction of Bryan winning.
Yeah, man, it was interesting. Again, I was at a friend's house watching the show, and it was like, as soon as it happened, you started to hear people making excuses. They're like, no, hold on. The count was a little bit too slow. And then somebody was like, hold on, man. They didn't play the music yet. They didn't play the music yet, so he didn't win. And it's just all these people trying to rationalize what just happened. And then I'm like, I think The Undertaker lost, y'all. And then they're like, no. Then you finally hear Brock's music. You see the signage. You see the announcers. And it's like, wow. And my buddy's kid, bless his heart, can't be more than 9 years old, but he had a nerve in that moment, in that room full of grown people that had been watching The Undertaker for years and more years, to just say, Undertaker sucks anyway.
Yeah.
Man, you would have thought.
Trying to make it.
The way that these adults turned on this young boy, you're like, hey, man.
Bite your tongue, little kid.
Shut your mouth and show some respect. And just the emotion, and you know, you go back and just the replays of the people in the arena, and just seeing, of course, the end of the street guy that's kind of become the new meme out of WrestleMania. Just seeing people just with their jaws dropped and their eyes wide open, like, I can't believe it. Seeing grown men and grown women with tears in their eyes, it's weird, because I think on the one hand, this was a masterful job of execution by the WWE. But on the other hand, I'm still not sure, and this is Thursday night we're recording. So, you know, it's not like WrestleMania just happened yesterday. So I've had some time to go back and rewatch the show and think about some things. I'm still not sure it was the right call.
I think it was absolutely the right call. Again, WWE thrives on capitalism, where the rich get richer. I was of the opinion that I didn't think the streak was ever going to win. And yeah, sure, I could see it being put to use if you make a guy. But keep in mind, there are so many holy grails in the WWE that people have fumbled. You know, Billy Gunn was once the King of the Ring. Dolph Ziggler cashed in and Money in the Bank. The Miz went over at WrestleMania 27 over John Cena. Who's to say that if Bray Wyatt ended the Undertaker streak, that would make him and he'd become a star? That's 5% of the star-making process. The other 95% is a follow-up. So that's what's important. But with Brock Lesnar, no follow-up required. He's a guy who's already a proven draw, a proven monster on pay-per-view. WWE is very wise not to talk about his losses whenever he comes back. He just beats up Mark Henry, and he's undefeated again. And the fact that he beat The Undertaker makes him as big of a draw as anybody in that company. So this is a rich get richer. It's not this kind of socialism type theme that we've seen with WWE trying to get everybody involved. I like the fact that Brock Lesnar beat The Undertaker. I'm tired of hearing that these young guys need to come up and be. No, they don't. Brock Lesnar is the star who's going to make you money, and he's going to make you more money now that he's beaten The Undertaker, especially with Paul Heyman. So you skew all that to one guy, and I love it. I think this is going to be great for the business. Maybe short-term, but it's going to be great for the business.
I agree with Alfred. You know, I'm assuming that Taker is ready to move on and retire, and, you know, if why not Lesnar, someone who does, you know, he has respect for in the ring, and, you know, it made sense looking back to things, and I'm just curious to see what they do with Taker now, if they're going to actually have a formal, you know, quote-unquote retirement for him, or I know they didn't really address it on Raw. Well, I didn't watch the broadcast of Raw. Did they address his injuries or anything like that?
They talked about the severe concussion, and, you know, of course, Heyman brought that up, but I believe going into it, they did say severe concussion. Again, another buzzword by Michael Cole.
But yeah, so I'm curious to see whenever he's healthy enough to come back, if he's going to get the send-off that Flair got, or if this is actually it, who knows? I mean, he could be back, for all we know, at some point next year. So, but yeah, it was one of those moments that, you know, it really cemented WrestleMania 30 as one of the top WrestleManias of all time.
Yeah, and my thing is, I think that if he physically is unable to go, you absolutely – should have ended the streak, but I'm still not sure Brock was the guy. And part of the problem is...
Who would you pick then?
Honestly, I would have gone with Roman Reigns. I would have pulled the trigger early on Roman Reigns.
I mean,
you have to think, if you knew, and I don't know if they knew...
How would you feel comfortable if anybody wasn't established?
I think that's the question, though. Like, how far along did they know that this was the plan? Because recently, then I think, you know, Brock is kind of the best of a bad crop of guys. But if you knew a year ago that Taker was going to retire or Taker was going to lose the streak, then I think you could have spent the past year building up a guy.
Yeah, I mean, we might never know when it's actually he decided to say, hey, this is it. It could be when he started training for this match. It could have been after beating Punk last year. By the way, shout out to CM Punk for his appearance in WrestleMania.
And the other thing, though, the other thing is, like, just from a match standpoint, it wasn't really a good match.
Not at all. No. If this finish didn't happen, okay, because this is going to forever be a match that was defined by its finish. If this finish didn't happen, we're looking at this match, as I said, this is the first match where I fell asleep on. And it was a bad match. I think when you look at what The Undertaker has done, been able to set the bar higher and higher through about 5, 6, 7 WrestleManias, this was a bad match. And by his standards, it wasn't good. But the fact that it finished the way it did is all I remember. And I think it made up for anything else that happened in that
match. You know what match would have kept you awake, though, Big Nasty?
What's that?
Undertaker versus that man called Sting.
Maybe you might see that. I don't know if they keep me awake. I don't know if they'd be able to stay awake for that match. So you know, you mentioned CM Punk earlier, Marcus. His girlfriend went on next in a very unfortunate.
Fiance.
Yes, his fiance AJ Lee, who wears the ring now, the future Miss Punk, if you will, Mrs. Punk, goes on and she wins the 14 Diva Battle Royal. Just you know, people were just still shocked, and I don't even think people knew this match was going on. They were just buzzing, and you could feel people just. You know, either way, this is going to be that buffer match, given this we're going to go from Undertaker to Daniel Bryan.
That's how stunned the fans were. They didn't even muster up the energy to crap on this match.
Nope. Didn't do anything. They're just kind of sitting around. You can tell they're still buzzing by the Undertaker. And this thing would last well into the main event. But, I mean, do you guys have any thoughts on the main event real quick? Not to shit on the Divas Division, which I think is on its boom period. It's just right. That kind of came out wrong. But it's right on the precipice of another boom period. Another huge moment, if you will, with Paige coming in and all that stuff. But this just wasn't a good representation. And on paper, 14 Divas single fall is garbage.
Yeah, you know it was going to be a train wreck going in, and it really wasn't that much better. And I guess because of what happened the following night on Raw, it made sense that they did what they did. But I still think, Naomi got the short end of things, and that is Oksana's fault. And if I were Naomi, I would be seeing somebody after the show.
Well, yeah, it was a better match than I thought it would be. So, and it was the end of Vicky Guerrero. So,
did your fiance care about the match, knowing that she watched Total Divas? Was she into the match?
Yeah, she likes the Bellas, and they did not win. And I could feel the tension when they started turning each other when it was Nikki and Brie in the ring. So yeah, she was pulling for either Bella.
That was like her Hogan Rock moment in Toronto when the Bellas turned at each other.
It was.
She's sitting there marching out, and everybody's like, "Hey, fill down." Yeah, but Nikki and Brie, I expected Brie to go over in this match because I've just seen so many similarities to the Chris Benoit storyline with Daniel Bryan. And if you remember, Chris Benoit WrestleMania 20 ended with him and Eddie Guerrero celebrating in the ring, both with their championships. I thought we were going to see the same type of scenario play out with Brie Bella and Daniel Bryan, who was this next man in the main event, triple threat match. He actually does make it out to the ring. We get the triple threat match. Again, crowd really kind of down for this match for the first part of it. Because they're probably sitting on their hands waiting for Daniel Bryan to win the match, and B, because they're deflated because of The Undertaker. The match really picked up when Triple H and Stephanie came out. And now you're starting to think, well, you know, if they screwed The Undertaker already, he lost. You never know what they could do with Daniel Bryan. So now they're getting into it, and the fans really start to come unglued when Triple H and The Authority comes out. They send out Scott Armstrong, who's a rogue referee. He's in a t-shirt, and he takes it off to show a referee shirt. Daniel Bryan gets pinned, and he goes, "This drove me crazy," with the slow regular count. I mean, if this is a rogue referee and Triple H pulled out Mike Chioda, and you're going to send in this rogue, why the hell is he going to count regularly? What's the rogue in that? That's perfect. The announcers brought it up, but still, I just kind of thought it was an off moment. Counted a regular count, Daniel Bryan kicked out. They did a lot of really cool near finishes here. The spot of the match came when Randy Orton and Batista, again, very similar to WrestleMania 20 with Shawn Michaels, Triple H, and Chris Benoit. When Shawn Michaels and Triple H basically were trying to take Chris Benoit out of that match so that they can solve their differences from their long-standing feud. This is the same story. Batista and Randy Orton were trying to take Daniel Bryan out of this match, and they get a table spot to where Batista powerbombs Daniel Bryan, and Randy Orton catches him and hits an RKO through the table, lands right on his back on top of a monitor. It looks really nasty, and he starts bleeding out of his back, but he ends up going on to finish the match. And, you know, Randy Orton and Batista are getting into it now, and fans are really rallying behind Daniel Bryan. So now they're at a fever pitch. They're taking Daniel Bryan out of on a stretcher. Prior to this, Daniel Bryan has taken out the Authority with a couple suicide dives, and they're on their way out. And so now it looks like we're just going to get Batista and Randy Orton, which if you look at, I mean, the crowd was dead. Like, they were dead for Batista and Randy Orton in the ring, but they were really getting behind Daniel Bryan. So maybe it was a good idea after all to just go with Daniel Bryan in there based on how the crowd has been reacting to him. Daniel Bryan got out of the stretcher, Mick Foley style, ran into the ring. They did a couple of false finishes with Batista's finish and then Randy Orton. And Batista throwing Randy Orton out, or Daniel Bryan out after a flying knee and trying to pin Randy Orton. But finally, Daniel Bryan hit the flying knee and a submission hold of the LaBella lock on Batista, or the Yes lock. And Batista's the one who taps out to Daniel Bryan, making Daniel Bryan the new champion. And I know you guys are talking about how the crowd is just down and wouldn't have been as hot. Watching at home, they popped huge. And if you watch on the WWE Network, the camera started shaking. You see the crowd going crazy. So this is as good as a finish, I think, as you could have asked for, given the fact that The Undertaker had just lost. You could tell they were reinvested in this match, which is all you could ask for, given the fact that he was out there for a second time. You know, starting with you, Nate, well, what did you think about the finish, and did they make the right call by making Daniel Bryan the WWE World Heavyweight Champion?
They absolutely made the right call in terms of the match itself. I don't know how it played out in the arena, Marcus, but for me and for the folks that were watching with me, we were still in a state of shock, and we really didn't get invested in the match until that big spot Alfred mentioned on the table. Like, that was kind of the thing that brought us back into the match, and from there, we were invested, and you know, great finishing sequence, Daniel Bryan. You know, this is not the plan they had all along. For anybody that thinks it is, no, it's not. It's not. But this is probably a better plan than the one that they actually, you know, had envisioned. And, you know, this Yes movement was organic, and I'm sure in a few months it's going to be played out because they're going to try to wring every shekel they can out of it. But for right now, let's enjoy it because it is a happy moment, and you know, it's good to see a guy that has really worked hard and got his WrestleMania moment. So I think it was a great way to close the show and really brought things up after, you know, the Taker match kind of brought things down a little bit.
Yeah, I think when Triple H came out, that's when fans got interested, and I think that's when we really got the most CM Punk chants during the night, because I think people thought that Punk would come out and somehow get Triple H out of there, but wishful thinking. I didn't like the stretcher spot. I really actually thought the stretcher spot was for Orton, because I really thought he hurt his back.
He legit hurt himself.
I was like, oh, man, he's done. Especially if you look at the match, Batista did the spot. Batista's, you know, seemingly fine, but he stops. He doesn't try to get Orton back in the ring. He doesn't try to get Bryan back in the ring.
You can see him talking to Orton. Like, Orton's got this just in his face. You can tell he's in pain. Batista's talking to him like, dude, are you all right?
Yeah.
That's a good speaking.
Yeah, I mean, Bryan, okay, that's one thing. You figure he might be actually hurt, but you'd figure he would at least try to get Orton back to the ring, but that's why I thought he was actually hurt. So that was an awkward moment in the match where Batista sort of just hit pause while they did their thing. But overall, yes, it was a great reaction, a great story that's been told now since August at SummerSlam, and, you know, another great WrestleMania moment on this show.
Yeah, by far this year's show was head and shoulders above last year. You know, even though last year had The Rock, and that was pretty cool, this year everything seemed bigger. And, you know, maybe that was because of the anniversary. Maybe that was because they knew they had to put their best foot forward because of the network, which we didn't have any problems with the network where I was watching, by the way. So that is a big thumbs up to the WWE on that. I know some places there were some issues, but for us it seemed to work fine. But they definitely needed to step up and give the fans a reason to come back and be marks, because I think the story of the winter was, you know, the disgruntled nature of the fans and, you know, the boycott Raw, or, you know, just trying to hijack shows and things of that nature. Now, they're still going to do that because fans at their nature are fanatics, as Alfred always said, but this is a step in the direction of, oh, man, this is a cool story. I can't wait to see where they go next.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think based on just how this WrestleMania played out, I think this is a WrestleMania where the WrestleMania itself, the sum was greater than its parts. Because if you look like at a WrestleMania 17, I think it's the greatest WrestleMania of all time just because it had so many great matches. And that's what I look to first and foremost. But when you look at the spectacle, you look at, was it memorable? Was it a WrestleMania you can go back and pull 2-3 moments from, like just like that? I think this has to be considered at least in the top 10, maybe top 5. So I'll go around. Starting with Marcus, would you say top 10, top 5, or none of the above as far as WrestleMania 30 is concerned?
Oh, I'd probably say, yeah, top 5 easily.
Me too. Nate?
That's a great question. I definitely think it's top 10. I'm not going to go as far as to say top five, at least for right now. But, yeah, just off the top of my head, it's definitely top 10. And right now, just kind of quickly slotting things, I'd say it's probably around 7 for me.
Yeah, that's fair. But I think, you know, I can't think of too many WrestleMania. I'll think 17, 24, and 19. I'll easily put above, maybe not even so much easily, but I can feel comfortable putting those above it. But then from then on, I can't really be comfortable putting anything else ahead of WrestleMania 30. I just thought it was so great.
I mean, 3 is always, just from a nostalgic point of view, 3 is always going to be there for me.
3
is
there for me.
And the historic aspect of it, I think it earns its way into a top 5. But just from a technical standpoint, I think 30 was better than 3. But I don't know if I can put 30 ahead of 3 in my all-time rankings.
Right. No, and that's fair. I think 3 has to be up there, too, just based on what it meant. Well, I wanted to transition, if you guys didn't have any parting shots for WrestleMania, to Raw. And, you know, it was a great card. I wanted to get your guys' thoughts, maybe 3 big takeaways you had from Raw. Starting with Nate, what did you see just based on, because I think it was so great to see from an arena setting. It's just so loud how it comes across on television. You could hear everything in that tiny little arena and all those fans packed to the ceiling. What were your 3 takeaways from Raw this past week after WrestleMania, Nate?
Yeah, definitely were able to see the crowd in full effect on Raw, which I guess is like the WrestleMania for the fans. That's their main event. But the one thing I will say I missed in terms of just kind of the whole atmosphere of the weekend, I needed more Ric Flair just for me. I needed some more Ric Flair. I know there's tension there, but I needed more Ric Flair. Thank you, Mr. Flair.
He was on programming. He wasn't. I don't know if it was so much tension related. He was on their show on.
I think there's not tension in the fact that he's not going to be on the show, but I think tension in the fact that they limit him to what he can do.
Yeah, they've got to keep it on
for good reason.
I want it. This is the 30th anniversary. I want Nature Boy unfiltered with a little bit of drink in him. Just go out there and talk for 5 minutes.
He's ruined his opportunity. It's last year's SummerSlam.
Hold on, Jimmy Ross. I got something to say. Woo! I'm hosting this now. Take a seat, cowboy.
Outside of that, I'd say the 3 big things I took away from Raw are, I'm actually excited and invested in a Daniel Bryan title reign, which is something that I had soured on after the events of SummerSlam. There's so many ways you can go with this guy, so many opponents that you could put in front of him. That's one big thing. The second thing is Antonio Cesaro. And I think he's going to make a great heel, and maybe he's a guy that can be one of those multiple challengers you line up for Daniel Bryan down the road. Or you could turn him babyface, but I think for right now, especially aligning him with Heyman, he works as a great heel. And then the third thing I would say that I would take away from Raw is just, where was Sting? That was kind of the big question I had all night.
You didn't see him? You didn't see the guy in the Sting mask? That was him. You're just chilling. Waiting for that contract to get finalized.
Like, those were probably the 3 big things I thought of. Because I was like, you know what? This is a pretty damn good Raw, but it don't mean a thing if it ain't got that Sting.
You wanted to see a 55-year-old wrestler, and Daniel Bryan, which your big takeaways for your 2 old ECW stars and Daniel Bryan.
That's the best of both worlds right there.
Yeah. I mean, the way you make it sound, it doesn't sound great, but I'll take that. You don't have an age when you have the face paint. You're ageless.
Sure.
What were your takeaways, Marcus?
John Cena sucks.
Yeah!
John Cena, greatest
chant I've ever heard in my life. I'll give it up for that. That was incredible.
I was dying laughing. I'm not sure who started it, where it came from, but everyone picked up on it right away. And I would love to know if Cena's at SummerSlam, which he will be, if I have a chance to talk to him again, that's my first question is, did you laugh?
He was laughing.
He was corpsing.
Because
in
terms of creativity and just something different, and he's had a laugh at that, so... the fans, not as obnoxious as last year, but funnier this year in terms of their chants and creativity. But the 2 other takeaways besides the fans, I would say whatever they're building with Daniel Bryan, the Shield against, you know, Evolution 2.0, I'm curious to see if that's going to be the main event at Extreme Rules, or if that'll spin out into some kind of title match with Bryan and Triple H or something along those lines. And then NXT. I think NXT had a great showing on Monday between the vignettes for Bo Dallas and Adam Rose and Paige and Rusev, who really didn't do much, but he was there at least. So I think, you know, people shit on Triple H for quote-unquote burying guys, but Triple H is probably the biggest advocate for these young guys, and he's ready to push four more stars from NXT to the main roster, so that's much appreciated.
Here's my question, though, because to me it seems like I did notice that the young guys getting a little bit more shine, but it's like there is such a logjam in the mid-card right now. You know, we talked earlier about guys like Kofi. You got so many former world champions. You got more former world champions in the mid-card than in the main event. It's like there's such a block, such a clot of guys right there. It's like,
well, I mean,
is Bo Dallas really going to be the guy that breaks through
you don't know. Like, the Shield broke through the mid-card. The Wyatts broke through the mid-card. So it's like,
yeah, but that's right now, to the Bates point, is that they could just as easily, this time last year, Dolph Ziggler had broken through, they could just as easily come back to the point, to the pack. But to Nate's point, I think WWE realizes that problem, which is why you saw so many of these mid-carders, or not so many of them, but you saw a select few being featured from Cesaro, who had his own standout segment. You saw Bad News Barrett, which stuck out to me. Just, I mean, this guy, I was the one guy, I think, who loved the Bad News Barrett gimmick when it debuted. Everybody thought he was going to get buried, and it was going to be comedy, but this is something that people really latch onto. And I know it's a pro, you're proud, but I guarantee you it's going to get over to where people are going to be saying with Bad News Barrett that I'm afraid I got some bad news. And it was just great to see him in front of his home country finally get to wrestle. You know, we're seeing these wrestlers now get spotlighted, and I think WWE has chosen who they want going forward so they can avoid this logjam.
And I think with the network, there's going to be more ways to promote these guys. If you watch Main Event, we got another Shield-wide match on Main Event. They really started pushing that show to make that actually worth going out of your time to watch, especially now that it's live on Tuesdays. So I think as the network goes along, which we can talk about in a second in terms of how much money they lost this week in the stock market, but I think as the network continues, that they'll find ways to promote these guys and make sure that they, you know, get their proper due.
As much as I hate to say it, though, I think it might also be a case of spring cleaning, because there's only so many spots and there's only so many opportunities. And with a guy like Del Rio, with a guy like Kofi, with a guy like Jack Swagger, with a guy like Dolph, it's like these are good workers. These are guys that have been squandered to a certain extent by the company. But right now, what good are they? I think it's better for you to cut these guys and bring in more of the young guys than to keep these guys on the roster for one spot a year.
They haven't cut guys like a master. They haven't done it in a long time. I mean, guys, either your contract will expire and you can walk away, or you can sign up again. I don't see them doing a mass exodus of people, especially the guys you mentioned. Those are pretty, you know, they're not, where are they going to go? Plus, I mean, if you leave the WWE, they're not going to TNA. I'm sorry, Nate, they're not going to TNA.
I'm just saying, there's a global company out there.
They're not going to this social wrestling bullshit federation they're doing. You know, and I think that's part of the reason why these guys do stick around. I mean, you mentioned JTG. He wasn't in the Battle Royal. He's under contract.
That's a slap in the face right there, man.
Are you sure he's even still alive? I mean, when was the last time you even saw JTG?
SummerSlam, I saw him.
That's a while ago. Somebody better check on why, because, I mean, he's been absolutely the invisible man since SummerSlam, or since the last time I even saw him, so I can't remember when that was. So maybe he's like Milton, to where they don't know that he's still getting a check. Remember Milton from Office Space?
He signed in 2006. This man's been around for 8 years.
Wow.
So that proves my point, that they don't get rid of guys. They keep them around. And you know, you mentioned guys who might not have a role. For all we know, they could be down at the training center putting their time in that way in terms of trying to work with the NXT guys. So we don't know what exactly these guys are doing when they're not on camera. So, yeah, I don't see them getting rid of anyone.
Yeah, I don't see it. I think it's a...
Sorry, Derek Bateman. You're the only one who got let go because you suck.
Yeah, and actually, I'd rather be Derek Bateman right now than Kofi.
I wouldn't, because check Kofi's bank account.
Check his Twitter following.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys, you get all this exposure, even if you're the spot guy. Say what you want about it, but you never know when somebody could break out. There's a lot of people in WWE and professional.
Now Kobe's not breaking out.
No, we don't, because there are a lot of people who peak late. Daniel Bryan peaked late. You're going to hear a lot of people say that Daniel Bryan is the face of this new generation, which couldn't be farther from the truth. But Daniel Bryan is closer to John Cena than he is Bray Wyatt. You think of when Cena was launched at WrestleMania 21, 10 years later, he's still going relatively strong, and he's 36 years old. In 10 WrestleManias, Daniel Bryan just got launched. 10 years from now, he's going to be 42 years old, so he's not going to be at that WrestleMania 40. You know what I mean? So Daniel Bryan was very late in his wrestling career, and even though Kofi's been hanging around, you never know when you can get that up. And remember R-Truth when he had that heel, little Jimmy gimmick? That thing got pretty hot, considering where R-Truth was for most of his career.
He spawned that.
They did, but he at least was competing for WWE. He was carrying around the WWE Championship. I mean, what more can you ask for if you're black?
Oh, somebody's going to get a letter tomorrow.
That's fine. Just to touch on the network real quick, we did predictions before, or last weekend. I was closest.
Putting himself over.
But it wasn't big enough for investors because the stock took a dump all this week. It dropped 7% today. It's down over 20% this week. I guess the issue for people who know this type of thing is that they feel the 667,000 subscribers isn't a big enough base, and they're worried about how it's going to grow. I think there's still room for growth, especially before they get released into UK and Canada, which I think they can do equal numbers overseas. So if you do own stock in WWE, I'm sorry. I would wait until they announce their network deal for the TV rights and see that maybe that helps some. But, you know, I thought that's a fair number they released on Monday, and it can only grow from here.
Yeah, like from a product standpoint, they're good. They're golden. You know, like I said, I had a chance to check out the network at my buddy's over the weekend. And the good part was, you know, because I slept on the couch because I'm a very responsible person. And anybody that saw my Facebook knew that I had a little margarita and a little something-something. So I was like, I'm just going to crash on the couch, brother. And I got to watch the WWE Network all night long. I think it was, what's the show, Legends Confidential or something like that?
Legends Roundtable, yeah.
Legends Roundtable, I watched a bunch of those shows. They were excellent. The only gripe I had was that they didn't have the one for Black History Month on there, which, again, ties into my theory. I sense a recurring theme, brother. But other than that, man, it was a very cool, easy-to-use interface, a good product, but I don't know. Do you think that there's a peak after WrestleMania, you know, from folks that missed out, or do you sense that if they didn't get that big boom before Mania that they're not going to get it again until Mania next year?
I think there's room for growth. I do. I really think that I know that this is a disappointing number, and the reason why the stock was selling out, the main theory is that they were people who internally thought that it was going to do 1 million, and they were throwing out those numbers. So when investors saw 600 and something thousand, they said, well, you know, that's way off, and they thought that this was going to be a flounder. One of the most, you know, the craziest, actually legitimate theories I've heard that investors are really believing is that when The Undertaker lost, they decided to sell stock because they thought the streak was one of the biggest proponents and marketing tools of WrestleMania, and with the streak now no more, they sold stock, and they didn't think WrestleMania was ever going to be the same. So that's a crazy yet kind of viable theory that you would hear. But when they go international, I think they're going to be fine. They may not be the juggernaut they thought they were going to be, but I think people are kind of panicking at this point. I think it's still a good number, maybe not great based on the expectations, but they should be a little bit worried based on how much went into promoting this thing and the fact that they included WrestleMania for it to do subs. You know, I thought it was going to do 750,000. For it to do sub 600 is really kind of concerning.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think the word of mouth from people who are having positive experiences will help them, and I think every month we'll see a bump with each pay-per-view that happens, especially I think we'll get a bigger SummerSlam show as a result, and, you know, some of the programming they did leading up to WrestleMania, they had a nightly sort of like a college game day show that they did from Access. I think we'll see a lot of that around SummerSlam and a lot more original programming. So, you know, I think with each pay-per-view they'll see an increase. And I think once they start rolling out Monday Nitro, which they're supposed to be doing in the summer around their new Raw versus Nitro show they're doing. I think people who are hardcore WCW fans, Nate, will say, oh, okay, well, I can go back and start watching old Nitros, and yeah, maybe that's a reason for me to join. So I think they're fine. And once they reach Canada and the UK, then they should be good to go.
Yeah, I think they're targeting two different types of viewers. I think you've got your viewers now that are watching the current product, and I think in terms of America, they probably maxed out of those guys. But there's also that other set that's like me that's a casual view of the WWE, but if you tell me I can get every WCW, every ECW, every AWA, World Class, is that a part of the package?
Not yet. I mean, they do have some of it,
World Class. Yeah. I mean, they've been rolling out, like for the Raw, as an example, they've been rolling out, it looks like a Raw every day, every other day. They roll out
if
a whole
Raw. If you tell me I can get all those, all of that back catalog, it's absolutely worth it. So I think that, you know, I'm the fan that they're trying to get now, the fan that has an awareness of who the WWE is and may watch a Raw every now and then, but is not going to just give Triple H my money just because he says so. Like, I'm the guy that you have to convince, but he's already leaning towards you.
No, that's good. And I think the three of us who have plans on going to SummerSlam should be very excited because SummerSlam is going to come off like a WrestleMania. That's going to be the six-month mark where people are going to start unsubscribing if they feel like they're not getting their money's worth from the WWE Network. And WWE is aware of that. And I'm sure that there are things, Sting included, that they are going to load up SummerSlam with to convince people to stay on with the WWE Network. I truly do think that if Sting does wrestle, which that's 50-50, it's going to be at SummerSlam. Or they're going to have him as some kind of host or ambassador role at SummerSlam to where they're really going to load this card up and convince people to stick around.
And before we talk about that, man, right here in a second, I did want to say one more thing that would get me even more invested in the WWE Network, the original program, like the Legends House, that seems like it can't miss. What's the show they bandied about with Steve Blackman as the bounty hunter? Like, that sounds like a cool concept. And they should ask viewers to submit concepts. Like, for me, I had something I've been working on for a while. Check this out, Big Nasty. Let me know if it's a good concept or not.
He's there on JTG on the show.
JTG, Ron Killings, and Xavier Woods around. And they go each and every week and check the rundown sheet on Raw and see if they're booked or not. And then we tape their reactions. It's called Blacklisted.
I like that. I thought you were going to see Little Black Book, but Blacklisted is even more fitting. I like that.
I think all three people that are watching YouTube just clicked off right now.
We've been blacklisted.
Getting back to that man called Sting, I guess today it became official, Brother Marcus?
Well, as official as dirt sheets make it official, because, I mean, it's not like the WWE confirmed anything, so this is our boy Dave Meltzer.
Dave Meltzer is very reliable. I don't know why you would besmirch that man.
You never know. Big Dave.
Yeah.
I'm sure he had reliable sources, brother.
No, I believe him in stuff like this. I just, you know, stuff that he tosses out of his ass, I just question, but I believe him. He signed a contract reportedly with the WWE, and his new deal will include television time, but at the present, it is unknown when he will make his debut and how often he'll be on TV.
SummerSlam.
But he did, at WrestleCon, he did mention that his new favorite number is 31, so we'll see.
Yeah, this is, like I said, this is kind of the big thing that I was waiting for on Monday because, you know, we all saw the pictures of Sting in the airport in New Orleans. And I'm like, I was waiting all night, Monday night, just waiting. That was the best hook. The best hook the WWE had to get me to watch an entire 3-hour Raw.
But, you should have known when Undertaker lost that this was probably not going to happen.
Well, I honestly think that him losing before I knew the extent of his injuries, when he lost, I was like, that actually makes a better story if you want to go to Taker and Sting. Because now the streak is out of the way, so it's more believable that the match can go either way.
Yeah, you can make that argument that people would be more into the match because I think the main reason people just they weren't buying anything. And F5s, every false finish was given kind of a token reaction, like, no, it kicked out. Like, but, you know, if you get the streak out of the way, then you eliminate that big monster that has been really WWE has to do heroic booking in order to get people around the fact that this streak could end. So if they ever do fight again, which I think The Undertaker should retire, I think he's done. I think he's gone out on a high note, even though this is controversial. It's going to be talked about forever. I think The Undertaker should just retire, and there's other guys Sting could face off with.
I think he should do the job to Sting on the way out, since he's so comfortable losing to part-timers and people that are getting up there in age.
Why would he job to
do the right thing, Taker?
Stop. Get out of here.
I know you're watching at home, Taker.
Where's the new right thing
and job to Sting?
Just go in there and job in like 10 seconds, just like Jeff Hardy did. Just Sting there, hit him with the death drop, it's over.
That would get Sting over, and then you can build to Sting and Bray Wyatt. I honestly think that would be a heck of a feud, at least from a storyline build standpoint. In the ring, it would probably be atrocious, but from a storyline creative standpoint, I think Bray Wyatt and Sting has a lot of potential.
I don't think it would be atrocious. Bray Wyatt's a guy that can really – he's a perfect opponent for the Undertaker because he can bump all over the place, and he's big and strong, so you believe his offense. And, I mean, if the Undertaker didn't get hurt every time he took a bump, I would be very interested in seeing Bray Wyatt against the Undertaker, not only from the storyline
standpoint. No, I'm talking about Bray Wyatt and Sting.
Oh, Bray Wyatt and Sting? Oh, well, I could say the same thing about Sting and Bray Wyatt. But, and you know, Sting isn't as brutal as the Undertaker is, so I'd be maybe even more interested in seeing that.
Nah, that Cena match was atrocious. It'd be atrocious.
It was atrocious. I said, I mean,
it was not. People weren't invested. Once they got in the ring,
I think it was. And I think when we get the rematch at Extreme Rules, whatever kind of gimmick match you do, I think that's going to be very good. I thought the brawn between these two is very well. The story I could have done without, but I didn't think this match was very bad at all. I thought they did what they could with what they were given of the surprise concession exodus.
Yeah. I think so. I think one of the big questions I have, though, with Raw is, do we see John Cena ascend back into the main event, or do we see him just kind of hanging out in the mid-card for at least the next couple months?
I think eventually he'll get back there.
And we get Cena Bryan headed into SummerSlam? Is that where you think we're going?
I think so. I would want to see that.
That'd be a hell of a match for the crowd.
Yeah. Brian
it'd be,
still
it'd be a rematch him. From a year ago, so it'd be great storytelling from, you know, Cena was on his way out, he put Brian over, and, you know, now Brian should pay him the favor and give him the opportunity to fight for the title.
And I expect to see Cena a gatekeeper for quite some time, just siphoning off guys who are on the way up to that top-level place are going to face Cena before they get that shot. I think he's going to do this for the entire year. I think this is going to be a theme. I think WWE is calling up a lot of young talent, and they've pretty much looked at Cena to be the guy to work with them, whether it's Bo Dallas, whether it's even a Cesaro, even like not that he's young, but he's up-and-coming. So I think Cena's going to have a lot of very good up-and-coming matches with these younger guys, and it's going to be to the betterment of him making money and to the betterment of him having great matches, to where his legacy is going to be forged on these great matches he's having on the back end of his career, much like The Undertaker.
Yeah, and speaking of siphoning off talent, I know Marcus has derided and scoffed at this idea all night long, but real quick, what are your thoughts on Jeff Jarrett and his new promotion?
Double J!
I want to see for Alfred because I've already expressed my what I got from Jeff Jarrett thing was he didn't really tell us anything. He said, okay, I'm announcing a promotion, but there's another announcement coming next week. Fuck you, get out of here. Whenever he's done announcing his announcements, then I'll get back to you on that.
I'm just glad to see it. I think a lot of people have said that this is the next boom period of wrestling, which I don't know if I quite agree. But I think this is a very exciting time for wrestling. I think this has been the busiest week and just the most news-making mainstream week for wrestling, from The Undertaker losing to the untimely passing of The Ultimate Warrior to the Yes Movement taking off from a mainstream standpoint. We're just getting all this great stuff for WrestleMania, and I think wrestling is just going to build on this. And I'm always happy to see the announcement of an ambitious promoter who wants to make a mainstream product. I hope for the best. Wrestling is always better when there's competition. Yeah, he's fighting an uphill battle, but so is Vince McMahon at the time of WrestleMania 1. So there's always going to be an uphill battle when you're going against a giant like the WWE. And Jeff Jarrett, while I may not be a big fan of his wrestling career, is a very good promoter, a very good wrestling mind when it comes to the guys who are left out there who are considered the booker.
And I think the smart thing now this time around, because he's at an advanced age and he's not going to be as much of an in-ring competitor, you're not going to have the problem you had in TNA in the early days when everything centered around Jeff Jarrett. He was basically a Southern Triple H. I think that
Planet Jarrett.
Yeah, Planet Jarrett. And I think that the challenge for this company is not to go head-to-head with the WWE. Their challenge is to go up against ROH, to go up against Dragon Gate, to go up against TNA. And as I don't know if you – did you guys hear the big news tonight? Spoiler alert.
I just read it, and I just wanted to shit on them next because – go ahead. Make the announcement.
Yeah, spoiler alert for everybody out there watching. Hook earmuffs for at least the next 2 seconds. But your new TNA World Heavyweight Champion.
Really?
Showtime, Eric Young.
Are you serious? Well, I've stopped watching TNA for quite some time now. I didn't want to make a public stink, but I'm not going to start now.
Well, I'm going to watch Ed Foley. Now that you announced it, I'm going to watch to see how he wins because, wow.
Eric Young, that'll put butts in the seat.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so I think that if you are giving me the choice as a TNA fan, you say you can watch TNA doing what they're doing now, or you can watch Jeff Jarrett with a company that has AJ Styles, Chris Hero, some dudes from Mexico in it, an obligatory black guy, maybe Monty Brown. You know, if I can watch that or TNA, I might have to go over here and watch Jeff Jarrett.
I think you're being optimistic that they're going to get Chris Hero and AJ Styles.
I think AJ is doable. Chris Hero, you know, that. But I think Jarrett's already got an established relationship with AJ. If the money is right, I think he'd consider it because being on TV is better than not being on TV.
Yeah, I think they at least get one of those guys, and I think it would be a coup to get both, but I wouldn't be surprised if they got either or.
Well, I mean, what have they announced any TV? That's the thing. He didn't announce anything. He said, I'm announcing a promotion. He didn't announce Rage and Find the Promotion. When it's actually
launched. You've got to build these things. It's a slow burn. It's old school.
I understand that, but for us to say that he's going to have, you know, a better TV package than Sinclair and ROH, then how do we know? We don't know anything.
I mean, I think just you can't announce a promotion at all. You can't even get to this point without having a TV partner. Because
you can announce a promotion right now. Nate, you can announce a promotion tomorrow. What's stopping you from announcing a federation tomorrow? Nothing.
Because I think what we saw with WCW is even if you have the biggest company in the world, if you don't have TV, it doesn't matter. And I think in this day and age, in 2014, if you don't have at least some type of outlet for your product on a broadcast stage, then it doesn't matter, even if you know, you've got Jeff Jarrett and Toby Keith and all that money behind it. So I don't think that they would have made this announcement without having at least a somewhat of a framework for television that they're going to bring to the table here in the near future.
If AAA couldn't get a legit broadcast partner that people could easily access, and if the WWE is having issues trying to find a new home, I don't see this promotion having a TV deal that we haven't heard about yet, so I'm not buying it.
Maybe they'll end up on
BT. Maybe it's because this promotion has already stepped in the door, and they've taken the TV deals from the WWE and AAA. I think we're too fixated on TV.
Jeff Jarrett on BT.
I think as we're watching the WWE move away from traditional TV, I don't, you know, it's not the end all be all for.
Right, not at all.
Yeah, but I think that the WWE has the luxury to do that, whereas I don't think the other companies do at this point. The WWE can kind of take the loss from not having that exposure because they're a self-contained entity to a certain standpoint, whereas if you're TNA or ROH or Dragon Gate or Chikara, you're going to need a little help from your friends.
Well, I mean, I don't think these promotions are attracting the mainstream audience. If the WWE is not bringing the mainstream fan in, then why not just target your 10%ers who you know will follow your product online and just dedicate yourself to approaching them instead of trying to broaden out and land the average wrestling fans. I don't think that's going to happen. If they're going to watch the WWE, if they're going to watch wrestling at all, they're not going to watch, you know, a Jeff Jarrett promotion that they stumbled across on TV.
Now, that's the other thing. Like, what is the wrestling fan now? Like, I recently heard, I can't even believe I'm saying this, but one of the most interesting things about wrestling today is something that I heard from the Disco Inferno. And what Disco Inferno said was that you don't have a casual fan anymore. You have a hardcore fan or a fan that used to be a hardcore fan, or you've got kids. And those are kind of your three bases that you pull from. You got your nostalgia fan, your hardcore fan, your internet guy, and the kids. And so it's like they ROH knows who they have, and Chikara knows who they have, the WWE knows who they have. And for a company like a TNA or like this new company that Jeff Jarrett has announced, you're going to have to almost create a fan base, because the hardcore guys, they, you know, they're fickle. They can turn on you. The kids, they don't care about Jeff Jarrett. So it's like you almost have to define yourself and also redefine your audience.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say that there's no such thing as a casual fan anymore. I think when you look at the television product, it does seem like everybody's in the know and everybody's hardcore, and WWE seems to be booking toward that audience this day and age. But there are still, and there are always going to be casual fans, and these are the families, these are the kids that you're talking about.
Are the casual fans enough to make a difference, though? I think the kids make a difference, and I think
the families, absolutely.
I think the smarks make a difference, but in terms of a casual fan without a kid, that's like a college student. Like, where do they, like, do they matter? Because I don't think there's enough of those type of fans to make a difference. I think you've got a lot of kids, and you got a lot of smarks, and the in-between is dwindling.
Yeah, maybe we've redefined it, though. There's always going to be varying degrees to where now, even though we're in an era where everybody seems to be skewed hardcore, those hardcore fans are just, they're on the message boards. You know, they're even more hardcore than they were before. So there's always going to be that minority in that the majority. And I think the majority is still people who are going to be buying the product and the people that WWE needs to book toward. You know, they're not going too deep into the hardcore aspect, but they're still giving these little wink-wink references to, like, best diva in the world, like AJ's. Lee said it, and stuff like that. But I do think that there's always going to be a casual element to the fan.
That's a good question. We haven't done a question in a while. Let's throw that out to our listeners for the Ringside Wrap next week. Is there a casual fan left in professional? Not a number or a guy, but, you know, does that category of fan, does that really exist anymore? Has the fan base gotten so fractured that it's hard to define?
And lastly to that point, you see with merchandising that there is definitely still a casual fan, because if there wasn't those, WWE, in an effort to, again, placate that hardcore sentiment, they rolled out John Cena sucks t-shirts. And they said, okay, if Cena really does get these 50-50 reactions, here you go. Here you go, hardcore fans, buy them. That t-shirt, if you go on ShopZone right now, went from $24 to $7, and WWE doesn't even sell them anymore because nobody bought them. Because these loud cats, these hardcore fans, don't exist as much as we think they do. And John Cena's merchandise still sells like hotcakes, which is why he hasn't turned heel. So, yes, sure, there is a vocal pocket, and these casual fans are going to the shows, but they're not as prominent maybe as it seems like on TV.
This is a good discussion. Marcus, you want to get in on this?
I would say I observed a lot of casual fans at WrestleMania who made the trip out there, but they weren't, I wouldn't exactly call them hardcore fans, just based, like, overhearing some of the conversations that they were having about wrestling-related stuff, that they were the casual fan. They weren't really on the internet reading about stuff. They were just watching the TV product, and they decided to make the trip out there. So, yeah, I think they do exist. It's just, you know, the internet people think they rule the world, and they actually don't. They're a small, small, small percentage of the actual fan base of the WWE.
You got the 10%ers that think they're, you know, 100%ers.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's an interesting conversation. Time is starting to get away from us, though. Shout out to everybody watching us on YouTube, and if you're not, you're probably listening to this on Friday. But before we get out of here, any final thoughts of WrestleMania, Raw, The Ultimate Warrior, kind of the week in general? Starting with you, Brother Marcus.
Probably the most emotional weekend of wrestling in a long time. Just between the Bryan winning, Hall of Fame, Warrior's death, Taker losing, just a lot of going on. And also, quick mention, shout out to the people I met at the Review A Way meetup on Sunday. I met a couple people listening to the show, including Demetrius, the other black guy in the room.
Yeah.
And he was from St. Louis. He drove down with his wife from St. Louis. And actually, his anniversary was on Monday. So that's dedication, because I couldn't pull that shit off if I get married during WrestleMania weekend. I would not be spending my weekends at WrestleMania during anniversary. So
are you sure, brother?
She would not let that fly. Come on.
You never know. She might become a hardcore fan by then, man.
There you go. Seems like she's on her way.
This is why I'm picking my wedding to not happen during an active sports weekend. So, like the Masters, that's a great reason to get married. Who cares about the Masters? So
the Tiger's gone. I don't care.
Yeah. So yeah, shout out to and I met a gentleman, I forgot his name, but he's from Alabama, who said he listened to the show as well. And people did ask about you guys and where you were, and I said, you know, they sent the star of the show. So.
Yeah, if you want things done right, you got to go with light. So that's Marcus. Yeah, exactly. He was our boots on the ground. Lord knows we don't want Big Nasty in a town with lots of loose liquor and looser women.
No, you wait until it comes to San Francisco, baby. I'll be all in there.
Yeah, so next year, WrestleMania 31 should be interesting. It's actually 10 minutes from the Yahoo headquarters, so that should be really fun.
Oh, so Yahoo should have a big presence that year.
We should have our headquarters too, I believe. Not 10 minutes, but very close.
What city are they in?
They're in San Francisco. They're in the heart of San Francisco.
Downtown. Oh, that's a bit of a drive. It's like a 40-mile drive.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's the other thing I think, and that's done to Sutton next year, is people, I don't think people realize how far San Francisco is from Santa Clara. So, word of advice, if you're booking travel for WrestleMania 31, don't stay in San Francisco, stay in San Jose. It's going to be a lot closer for you to get down there to Mania.
All right. So, Big Nasty, what was your takeaway from the week, WrestleMania, Raw, any of the big things that we've talked about tonight?
Great collection of speeches at the Hall of Fame, which I saw in its entirety on the network. It was very good, very well done. And I really am encouraged by
WWE. Mother's Day, it was Mother's Day.
Yes, it was great. That was incredible. And then the wedding of Mr. T when Austin was just corpsing in the front row. I loved it. That was a great moment. Barrett had a great moment.
One question real quick. Marcus, did you go to the Hall of Fame?
No, I did not.
Okay, because I was
going to 3.5 hours. Come on, man. I love wrestling, but no. Yeah, that's why they lose.
I didn't know. Because, I mean...
yawning their warrior speech. That's too long to be sitting in one spot listening.
For the people that think Mr. T went too long, like I watched the Hall of Fame the next night at WrestleMania after WrestleMania was over and the party was kind of distilling. And I'm like, you know what? Mr. T, he didn't go too long at all. Lita went too long, in my opinion. You could have taken 10 minutes off of Lita, gave 5 of those 10 minutes to Mr. T, taking that stupid Hornswoggle stuff off. You know, they could have tightened up the show a little bit more is all I'm saying.
Right. No, and I completely agree with that. I did think Mr. T did go a little long, but I don't think they should have cut him off.
Listen, once he started talking about his brothers, that should have been it. He should have wrapped it up with the whole Father's Day, Mother's Day joke, the holiday joke. That should have been it. Get out, get in, get out.
Now, the best one was when he introduced his son to when they introduced his son to introduce his dad. And he just,
T, Junior.
I'd like to introduce the father, Mr. T. Thank you, T. Junior. he looked like one of those dudes on Hollywood Boulevard that impersonates Mr. T.
Who, T. Junior?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, like a new school, like a new age Mr. T with that kind of cultivated
mohawk. Like, he can make good money off of that.
Right. But no, I really like WWE's merging of present and future. Is we saw around WrestleMania 25, they really tried to go all in with the future the following year at WrestleMania 26, where they just said, okay, we're going to get all these guys, we're going to make Sheamus WWE champion, and it was just too much too soon. Now it's like they're slowly integrating this present crop where you get the Daniel Bryans, John Cena's, and the big stars are still there, but then they're slowly moving in the new stars who are going to be feuding with them. So I think this is a winning formula in terms of locking down their future in the WWE, because that had been a big question mark for a while, and it still is, but I think they're on the right path.
Absolutely. I want to send a quick shout out to KME, your boy Chris in LA, who has been watching, and he agrees that Triple H has been doing a lot of good things with the youth movement, but he agrees with me. Triple H ain't pushing any blacks, though. LOL.
Maybe LOL. Out the door.
But as for me, I would say just it was a really, I can't say good week to be a wrestling fan because of what happened with the Warrior, but overall it was a very eventful week. From WrestleMania, the Hall of Fame, Raw, the Streak, even though Marcus doesn't have love for it, TNA, tonight with the title change. It's like, if you're a fan of wrestling and if you're listening to the show, chances are you are, then it's, Alfred mentioned some people think that it's going to be a boom. I don't think so. We're never going to get back to where it was in the 90s, but I do think that you can have a baby boom and increased interest and awareness in the sport. And I think that's what we're entering now. And a lot of that credit has to go to the WWE and the network. And I think it would be great if TNA got their stuff together, if Jarrett's promotion got on his feet, ROH stepped it up, New Japan stepped it up, because when, you know, the water rises, all boats are affected, and I think that, you know, this is a great sport, a great form of entertainment, and, you know, this week showed us how much that, you know, wrestling can kind of take us on that roller coaster of emotion. So I thought it was pretty cool, all things considered. So with that, I think it's going to be time to call it a show. Brother Alfred, where can our listeners and our viewers tonight contact you, let you know how they enjoyed the show, how they enjoy your work, and any other conversations they might want to have with the one and only Big Nasty?
Find me on the Heart of Bleach Report. Watch my two hit shows, read my articles, go on Twitter at This Is Nasty, and follow me. The Nasty Network only gets stronger, baby. And whether you love me, whether you hate me, I love all of you. Mwah.
Marcus Vandenberg, where can people find you? And also, we did get a tweet. Brad from the Place to Be Nation is watching. Shout out to Brad. And he made note that, you know, Alfred and I are looking pretty dapper. And what's up with Vandenberg, though?
Business casual?
Listen, Brad, I got two jobs, so I can do whatever the fuck I want on my off day, right? You can follow me on Twitter at MarkBillWell. You can see below. And, yeah. T-shirts. Fight on, Alfred. Fight on.
I love it. I love it. Right there. You see that, Nate? You know what this means? Do you know what? Do you understand this? When you come to Southern California, you'll find out what that means, baby.
We're thinking about USC.
No, what are you talking about? I thought that was USC. USC colors on.
Yeah. So we're. Are you even allowed back on the campus after you got Coach O'Fire?
I don't know, man. I haven't been back. That'd be kind of awkward. Ah, jeez.
You can follow me on Twitter in the number 8 MOZAIK, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. Follow all of us at COSPOD, KOS_POD on Twitter. Unfortunately, I will not be on Review and Impact with our good friends John Pollock and Wei Ting this weekend, but if you do want to hear my thoughts on TNA, head over to Place to Be Nation and check out my weekly column on TNA and the wild and wacky world of Impact. I'll keep writing about it as long as they're on the air, which is always a nifty proposition.
When's the TV deal up again?
Over here.
End of the year, right?
Hey, yeah, the end of the year. So we'll see. Will Eric Young be the guy that makes the change and sparks this company?
I'm going to say no.
I was going to say, spoiler alert, he won't be.
Yes.
Yeah.
But
well, the good part is that they'll take 6 weeks of spoilers starting tomorrow probably. So we'll know by Sunday where they're going with this whole thing.
If they've gotten to the 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Like Magnus is the champion again, and then he loses it again.
Real quick, Marcus, what does your shirt say? What's on your shirt?
Oh, it's a picture of Matt Barkley.
I see. Okay, so it's all right. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, shout out if you're watching on YouTube. If you're just listening to the podcast version, thanks for downloading, but you should be watching this on YouTube. And again, head check us out at placebenationpodcastland.com, iTunes, Stitcher. Like the show, share it, review it with your friends, all that good stuff. Thanks for checking out the show. I know we had some technical difficulties tonight, and thanks to everybody who stuck with us. We're going to try to do these more often, so hopefully the process will get smoother, and hopefully you guys enjoy these. So before we sign off, you got anything else, fellas?
I'm good, man. I got to get out of this tie is what I got.
Oh, well, since it is the close of the show, I think, you know, in honor of Jim Helwig, the only way that we can end the show is with a portion of his final promo from Monday night. And, you know, it was a great promo, almost eerie. What did you say, Marcus?
Yeah, I mean, I really thought that something more severe happened when I heard the news, and I'm glad I was wrong. But it just the way he delivered that promo, Yeah.
So, you know, Court Barrett said the Warrior was always a kind of the spiritual guy, and, you know, maybe he didn't know what was going to happen, but I do think that this was a good bit of closure for him and a good bit of closure for the fans, and, you know, it's not going to be easy for his family, but at least they had a great weekend with their father and with their husband. So I'll leave you with this, folks, from Jim Helwig, a.k.a. the Ultimate Warrior. Every man's heart one day beats its final beat. His lungs breathe their final breath. And if what that man did in his life makes the blood pulse through the body of others and makes them believe deeper in something larger than life, then his essence and his spirit will be immortalized by the storytellers, by the loyalty of the fans, and by the memory of those who honor him and make whatever that man did live forever. So to all of our listeners and our viewers out there, we hope you take a moment this week to not only reflect upon that man, but, you know, your own life as well. And you know, take the time to tell somebody how you feel about them, how you, you know, what they mean to your life, because life is short, man. You're here one day, you're gone the next, and nobody knows, you know, when their time could be up. So, you know, if you drink, pour some out. If you smoke, light one up. And if you pray, send one over for the Ultimate Warriors family. So rest in peace, Jim Helwig. And I think that's going to do it for Marcus Vanderberg, for Big Nasty Alfred Cunningham. I am the Godfather, Nate Milton. Rest in peace, Warrior Man, because you've been down with the Kings.